We have two commandments in our series today that would seem to be unrelated. Honor your father and mother, and thou shalt not kill. Well, how many times did they say to me, as a teenager, my parents are going to kill me? Because they would kill me for breaking curfew or for making a bad grade or for changing locations without calling. You know, you went from one friend's house to the next friend's house, you had to call. Now they can just text and you don't really know where they are. But back then, life just seemed like one long struggle for freedom. And now I look back on such security and predictability. And I realized when I sat down to write this talk that today, September 16th, was my parents' wedding anniversary. Would have been 62 years today. They divorced after 30. And they have both died since. But I always think of them on this day. And here I am preaching on the commandment to honor your mother and father. On their anniversary, my mother would say, I'm getting my comeuppance. So as we've seen in this series so far, the Ten Commandments were training wheels for civilization. They were written at a time when the Hebrews were settling down from a nomadic life to living together. And these basic agreements seem to work for most societies, and most of them have something about honoring your parents. The Hebrews took it really seriously. If you cursed your parents, you could be put to death. And both of these commandments today, honoring your parents and not killing, can be taken quite literally and lead to some meaningful questions. They can also be broken open and taken deeper. So let's start with the literal meaning. Honor your father and mother. Let's stipulate that not all parents are good. Not all parents are loving or lovable. Not all parents did a good job. Not all parents are easy to honor. Some of us had less than perfect parents. Some of us have been less than perfect parents or step-parents. Children and parents are teachers for each other. We get to practice forgiveness from both sides. We keep psychologists in business. Many of you make your living on our families. I know people who have worn themselves out, blaming their parents for decades, telling the stories of what their parents did that was outrageous. I also know people who lost their parents early and were sad at every wedding and birth of a child and holiday. Now, I think missing someone and wishing they could be there is one thing, but some wear themselves out feeling cheated or abandoned or angry that their parents are gone. Some societies put parents on a pedestal. They control their children's lives. They arrange the marriages. Other societies wouldn't dream of putting their parents in a nursing home, so they live in extended families. We think we're too individualistic for that sort of thing. But we have what's now called helicopter parents because they hover all the time. Families are subject to cultures and religions, and still every family in the world is a little different. So how do we honor our parents, or for that matter, anyone, in complicated, less than perfect relationships? Is this commandment telling us to just be nice? Maybe, kind of. At least to start. Let me tell you how I have seen some of you honor your parents. I mentioned my parents are both gone, and both of them died quickly. They died 12 years apart, but I mean from the time of an incident or diagnosis until their death was just weeks. So I didn't have that long decline that some of you have experienced with your parents. The nursing homes, the doctor visits, the dementia, the expense, the energy, the caregiving that you had to make part of an adult life that was already full. I have seen some of you honor parents who didn't really deserve it, except that they were your parents. If we could balance how good your parents were to you versus how good you were to them, you would win. The point is, I've seen some real honoring of parents among you. and some genuine grief at the loss of your parents. The word honor in this commandment comes from the Hebrew kabod, which means burdensome. So apparently generational conflict is nothing new. And the Bible is full of stories about bad parents, about parents who played favorites, but it also has bad children, the prodigal son. In some ways, life may be one long lesson in learning how to love and live with other people. We accept the burden of our parents, just as they accepted the burden of midnight feedings and teenagers who forgot to call. But we can also look at this metaphysically, beyond the literal. Jesus said, you know, Jesus came along and expanded on all the commandments. He said, call no man your father. He said, anyone who doesn't hate his mother and father or brother and sister cannot be my disciple. The word hate may be more accurately translated as put aside. So put aside your family. But even so, Jesus told the man whose father had died, let the dead bury the dead. What he was saying in these stories was not anti-family. He was saying, seek first the kingdom of heaven. He said the same thing to the rich young man when he said, go sell all your possessions and give the money to the poor. What he meant was, don't let anything distract you or get in the way of your divine connection. No distractions, no false idols, commandment number two. So we accept the burden of our own divine potential. And our first loyalty is to that. In that sense, we are the parent of our own Christ child, the divine within. I usually describe my higher self as something bigger and grander than I am, bigger than my personality. But it can also be thought of as fragile, a precious soul that needs to be nurtured, the Christ child, our divine essence. A parent also molds and shapes the future self, and we do that for ourselves within, in thought. Just as a human parent molds the child, our attitudes today shape our tomorrows. This is basic law of mind action. We create the person we become. Now, we see children and young people doing that. They're exploring who they came here to be. They are creating the person they will become, and we cheer them on. We forget it's a lifelong process for us. We never arrive, we never finish, and that's good news. It means we are always growing and we can always change. Our greatest challenges in the growth process come from each other, from sharing a planet together, from living under the same roof. It starts in families. And then it expands to the whole world, which brings us to thou shalt not kill, commandment number 6. The modern translation is you shall not murder. That's different. Murder is a legal term. Killing is to make something dead, swatting a mosquito. There are a lot of ways we kill that are not considered murder. But even with that narrow legal definition of murder, we disagree on what kind of killing constitutes murder and what is necessary or justifiable killing. So we argue about abortion and the death penalty and war, gun control, whether to eat meat, even some people whether to swat the mosquito. Unity does not take a position on any of these issues, except that peace is better than war. But what we know spiritually is that the law, spiritual law, says whatever we put out into the universe is what we get back. Jesus said the measure you give is the measure you get back. He said whether it's love or forgiveness, whether it's judgment or violence, live by the sword, die by the sword is the cliche. It's not exactly what Jesus said, but it's based on the story of when Jesus was arrested and Peter, trying to be helpful, got out his sword and cut off the ear of a slave, some poor guy's slave. And Jesus said to him, put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. He meant there is a cycle to violence. Violence creates more violence, and the universe doesn't care who started it. When we get violent, we can expect violence in return. So how do we get out of that cycle? Well, this may have been Jesus' most radical teaching. It's in Matthew. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This is what presidents call proportional response. Or let the punishment fit the crime. Eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is from the Old Testament. And at the time, it was a progressive idea. It was fairness in punishment. You couldn't be put to death or have your hands cut off for just anything. It was just an eye for an eye. But it perpetuates the cycle of violence. Wasn't it Gandhi who said we all end up blind and toothless? Jesus turned it into transcendence in consciousness. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. If anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. You've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy, but I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. This is about elevating ourselves into divine consciousness, because the measure we give is the measure we get back. So we want to create from the highest possible mind. Breaking the law starts in consciousness too, in our violent or angry thoughts. Some of you have been studying nonviolent communication, which is very popular in Unity churches, but it's been around now for 20 years. Marshall Rosenberg developed it. When I took that class, I struggled with the idea that words can be violent. That just seemed like hyperbole to me. And a lot of people call that system compassionate communication for that reason. But haven't you felt beaten up by words? Some of you were beaten with the Bible in words. Have you felt slapped by something someone said, or pummeled with words, words that were used for judgment or criticism or belittling? Sometimes we kill with words. Have you ever killed someone's hopes or dreams with your words, or had yours killed by someone else? Words reflect thought, so we break the law first in thought. Or really, we break ourselves against the law. If it's a law, a principle, it really can't be broken. You can't break 2 plus 2 equals 4. You can get it wrong. You can misuse it, but you can't break it. So when we are angry, when we resist, when we feel murderous towards someone or something, we can't really kill it. And in fact, we're giving it energy. Energy to something we don't want. Killing thoughts come back stronger to kill you. So, to get rid of something I don't want, I have to change my thoughts about it. If I love my enemy, he's no longer my enemy. He's become someone I love now. And that's transcendence. That's divine consciousness. Love your enemy. Pray for those who persecute you. Turn the other cheek, go the extra mile. That's how we truly keep this commandment. And that is so much more difficult than just not murdering someone today. So our two commandments, honoring your parents and not killing, are connected, not because sometimes you feel like killing your parents or they're going to kill me, but because divine consciousness transcends the human burden of both. When we are in divine consciousness, or the higher self that is our essence, it's easy to have compassion for our parents, no matter what they did. And it's no temptation to kill, literally or figuratively, because we love unconditionally. And most of us nod and say, yeah, that's nice, and we go right on supporting war, or at least believing it's inevitable, and speaking violently to and about each other. Have you seen the political emails going around? Violent speech, some of them. What would happen if we loved our enemies? What would it look like if we turned the other cheek as a nation, as a political party, or even in our families? How could we honor each other just because we're on the same planet? Honor life. I invite you just to think about that this week. Where am I being violent to others? If not physically, then in thoughts or words. Is there anyone I'm not honoring, especially in the family? How could I honor them? We are not expected to have all the answers today. This is our life's work as human beings. But thanks to Moses and later Jesus, at least we know we're asking the right questions. And we know that the answers lie within, in our own divinity. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
So let's just breathe deeply. And bring ourselves back to that centered place. And in this moment, for me, that is listening to the rain on the roof. And begin to bring yourself to that deeper place. Way you visualize, or that place that you bring yourself to when you're ready to go to meditation. Whatever that looks like in your mind's eye, go there now. And simply know Simply open yourself to knowing. That you are indeed in your highest and best divine expression right now. If you feel any resistance to that idea, just breathe into it. And say to yourself, I know that I am here and now the best that I can be. Best that I can be as a parent or a child, a sibling, a friend. I am just the best me. Still on the road to discovery, still curious about life. Still wondering what I'm going to be when I grow up. Into that idea that we are never done. And we don't need to have everything. answer. We don't need to defend our existence. We are here by divine order. We are here by divine order. So breathe into that. And take another good listen to that rain. Into that rain, refreshed, alive, awake. Knowing that you are made of that very substance that rain is, by divine order, as a child, as a parent, a sibling, or a friend. Yourself to the gratitude of being in this place and this time, knowing it is perfect. Bring yourself back to this room and join me in the Alleluia.